Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. The Victory Garden, grown from deprivation and need during America's austere times in World War II, is as relevant now as it was in the 1940s. We'll take you on a tour of the lush, abundant garden at the World War II Museum, where they're feeding young minds and filling bellies. Then we go dockside to meet some shipboard chefs, recently here for Navy Week, and discover how today's military is fed. It's Memorial Day on this week's Louisiana Eats. While American troops fought World War II, those left behind on the home front were fighting the war in their own quiet way, coaxing vegetables from the backyard, putting food on the family dinner table. The National World War II Museum has recreated the Victory Garden of the 1940s, and here to guide our tour of the garden is Lauren Handley, Education Program Coordinator, and Master Gardener Melissa Luhr.
We're so glad you're here.
Thanks for coming to join us today.
So, would you all please, for all of our listeners, describe the garden? First, let's put us exactly where we are. We're almost in the shadow of the Mississippi River Bridge, and we're on Magazine Street in downtown New Orleans, right?
We are. We're here with a pylon driving behind us from all the new construction for the museum. We're here with buses passing by us every 15 seconds, and we're also here with a lot of people who like to stop in and talk to us about what we're growing, what we're doing here.
But actually, this urban setting would be very typical for a Victory Garden, isn't that so?
Just 6 months ago, this was a vacant lot on our property, which we decided to turn into a Victory Garden and grow fresh produce because we had space. Just like during World War II, people used vacant lots, parking lots, rooftops, and different places to grow their gardens.
So what do you have growing here?
Well, we have kind of a two-part garden. If you walk in the entrance, you'll see on the right, we have a bunch of herbs, mainly herbs. Couple of peppers and eggplants in, but the herbs are there for our neighbors who happen to be the American Sector restaurant for the World War II Museum. And then on the left you'll see several raised beds, and those are mainly filled with vegetables that would have been grown in the 1940s in a typical Victory Garden.
Tell me about how you did that research to discover what the families were growing and eating then.
For me, most of the research was in talking with people. There's an awful lot of people who, even if they didn't serve in World War II, they were perhaps a child during that era, and they all remember a Victory Garden. Either they had one or there was one right down the street from them. I believe at one point in time there were about 20 million.
There were 20 million Victory Gardens in World War II, so 20 million gardens meant 20 million hands or more growing those gardens. And so many of the young kids remember getting involved. We've, at the museum, done a kitchen memories campaign asking people to share their memories of cooking and eating and gardening during World War II. So people are always excited to tell us what they ate, what they grew, and living memories have been our biggest source of information.
I love that Kitchen Memories program. Would you elaborate on that a little bit and share with us some of the stories that really stand out to you from Kitchen Memories?
All right. We've had a variety from recipes for sugarless, butterless, eggless cakes to stories of trying to not have to go to the grocery store to use ration points for meat and attempting to grow rabbits and use those rabbits and then getting a little soft-hearted towards those rabbits and not being able to harvest them for the dinner table. And then there's the stories of families working together, wedding cakes, using those sugar ration books to save them among the family so that when the big day came, they could still get that nice wedding cake even though they might not have had the points within their household.
The Victory Garden was about a lot more than just growing fresh vegetables, though, wasn't it?
Yes. During World War II, depending on where you live, your growing season is only so long. Here in New Orleans, we're lucky. We can do a winter garden, a fall garden. We can garden all year round, but we can't have the produce from those seasons available year round unless you preserve. So there were lots of lessons from the government, from agricultural companies, pamphlets, different things to teach people how to can and preserve so that their strawberries could be enjoyed in November.
Lauren, the garden serves as an active teaching tool for the museum. Tell me about some of the programs you all offer.
We offer family workshops on Saturdays from time to time. Those are all be found on the museum's website. We also have a Victory Garden field trip. World War II can be a tough subject for kids, but gardening, getting out and getting their hands dirty, is a lot of fun and teaches the lessons of communities working together in teamwork. So we put together an elementary school field trip. We also have a really great website called the Classroom Victory Garden Project, which has things that teachers can use, families can use. It has tips for gardening with young kids, or whether you're in a classroom setting or you're at home with your grandkids.
Even though you all are located right here in the midst of downtown New Orleans, this is the National World War II Museum. And consequently, all of your programs and all of your outreach really does extend across the country, doesn't it?
It does. We have schools. We've put a map on our Classroom Victory Garden Project website, and we've asked people to tell us where they're gardening at. And we have people all over the country. And it's really neat to see that that community, even though it's such a small act of togetherness, you really feel connected then to people all over the country doing those same tasks in the garden.
Are you all getting any special requests from Chef Besh's crew to grow special things?
We get a lot of requests that we sometimes don't grow because we are trying to keep a portion of this garden true to what would have been a variety that you might have been able to find in the 1940s. So there's some things like the other day I was asked if I could grow an Italian strawberry, and I said probably not. That's not going to be in there. Though we do have Louisiana strawberries all throughout the garden. So.
And in order to grow these things, you're growing them from seed, right?
We're growing them from seed, or we're growing from donated plants. The Herb Society here in New Orleans, and probably 6 or 7 different plant nurseries have donated plants to us to put in the garden. So it's been a very collaborative effort, let's put it that way, yeah.
With this reach back into time, I imagine that some seed saving and heirloom seed program is going into this.
We're definitely seed savers. We just put into the back sheds our coriander and our dill seeds from this past season. We'll be reusing those over and over and over. That would have been very true, too, of what would have happened during World War II. There wasn't a big box store, perhaps, to go to buy your packet of seeds. So there would have been a lot of sharing of seeds from the particularly successful gardens.
Have you all thought about doing a seed outreach on your website?
The garden has so many possibilities, and that's just one more. Really, this Victory Garden is so much more than potatoes in the ground or the tomatoes that are getting ripe. We have kitchen memories, which we talked about, to seed saving, to get-togethers on canning techniques, and even harvest celebrations. All of these are possibilities. It is amazing what we can stretch and do with this garden.
Well, I really want to congratulate both of you all for this amazing work you're doing here at the museum, and thank you so much for welcoming us into your Victory Garden.
Thank you. Glad you could come by.
Come and see what we have planted next season.
Lauren Handley and Melissa Lohr in the Victory Garden of the National World War II Museum.
We are stars. We are gardeners. We are gardeners. Whatever.
Buckle, crumble, crisp, or cobbler. All those words conjure up fruit-based desserts that are the essence of homemade easy. Right now, when blueberries and peaches are at the height of sweet deliciousness, it's time to make this old-fashioned dessert. Combine a cup of flour with a half cup of brown sugar. Then, using your fingers, work in a stick of butter until you have a crumbly texture. Add 1/3 cup of coarsely chopped nuts and 1/3 cup of old-fashioned rolled oats. Then, in a separate bowl, mix together a couple of tablespoons of flour with equal parts of sugar and a pinch of cinnamon if you like. Toss those dry ingredients over a combination of sliced peeled peaches and fresh blueberries and pour the fruit into a baking pan. Sprinkle the oat and nut mixture on top and bake at 375 degrees for about 35 minutes till browned and bubbly. Then, top with a little whipped cream or ice cream if you dare. My favorite way to eat it is leftover for breakfast. It's got oatmeal in it, for goodness sake. You'll find a copy of this recipe and a treasure trove of others on our Louisiana Eats website at wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. It's time for our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The answer to this week's question, what family recipe was inspired by Randy Fertel's Uncle Martin and made famous on the menu at the original Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, is creamed spinach. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh, our Louisiana Eats producer, is manning the grinder.
This past week, there was an interesting cross-section of participants as neighbors and spouses competed for our prize. So no matter who you are, please don't hold any grudges against our winner, Ms. Leah Reed of New Orleans. Congratulations to Leah, and thanks to everyone who entered our contest.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, what was the name given to the vegetable gardens that helped feed America during World War II? Send your answers to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, what was the name given to vegetable gardens that helped feed America during World War II? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to LouisianaEats at wwno.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. To commemorate the bicentennial anniversary of the War of 1812, New Orleans hosted Navy Week. Over 3,000 sailors from across the world sailed into port on ships that ranged from modern military vessels to tall sailing ships. Dockside, we caught up with some of the culinary specialists responsible for keeping all those sailors fed. Culinary specialist Antonio Lindsay from the USS Duert introduced us to shipboard dining.
Good afternoon. My name is Antonio Lindsay, CS2 Lindsay, off the USS Duert. It's the small ship over there. It's FFG-45. And I'm the cook in the wardroom there.
And where are you based out of?
We're based out of Jacksonville. My ship is based out of Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, Florida?
Jacksonville, Florida.
And tell me a little bit about what supplies do you normally go aboard with? What do you bring along always?
Well, always is needs of the Navy. Navy is different from civilian cook. It comes from a fund that you have to work with what you get.
Yeah.
So it depends on where you are. If we're in port, it's no problem. You can get about anything you want. But if you're overseas, it's difficult to get different seasoning, different food items.
So when you leave, what's the most important thing in your arsenal you've got with you? If there's a seasoning you're worried about, which one is it?
Well, it would be seasonal, chicken-based and beef-based.
Okay. And how long do you go at a time out to sea?
Right now it's 7 months, but it is changing to 9 months.
And how does it change when you go into port? How does the cooking change aboard?
Well, once we go into port, we get more food. We get more fresh food. We get more fresh bread. We get brand new bread and fresh fruit. It's the main thing that we get: fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, and bread. Lovely.
Food service officer John Harrison previously served on a Navy submarine, but is now the equivalent of executive chef on the USS Wasp, a huge battleship that is virtually a floating city.
The worst thing we can ever do is keep a secret. So you have the knowledge of what you do. All I do is push it around.
Tell me about the submarine.
Well, we cook all kinds of dishes, but, I mean, we're all on a 21-day cycle menu. We all have to cook pretty much the same thing as everyone else in the fleet. But when you're underwater, it's like, hey, we're the morale of the ship. We're the morale of the submarine. There's no daylight. There's nothing. And, hey, it's just us.
So your men are driven by the food you're putting in their belly?
It.
Where did you get your training?
I got my training at, I joined the Navy right out of high school. So I went to a vocational school to learn culinary arts. And I got most of my training in the Navy going through culinary arts school in the Navy. So all I did was pass my expertise along because, I can't keep it. I got to give it to them. I got to show them the ins and outs, just little secrets and little tidbits.
How many people are you feeding on your ship?
Right now, we pulled in over 1,400 people.
1,400 people?
1,400.
3 meals a day?
4 meals a day, underway.
And where do you even keep all that food? How much food does it take, and how often do you take food on?
We have a lot of room and a lot of space to keep a lot of food, and we get underway replenishments. Cargo ships come alongside, hey, I need my order, and we have our orders in advance, and they'll slide it over, or we'll just make sure we take more than enough for wherever we're going.
That's incredible.
And that's my job, to make sure that we have more than enough. If not, our mission will suffer. You know, we can't go anywhere without food.
And what's the favorite meal?
What's the favorite meal? Well, sometimes I hate to say it because it's not really health conscious. But the favorite meal, because we have so many young adults,
yes.
The favorite meal is pizza and wings.
Pizza
that
and
is the
wings.
Favorite meal. And the second one is steak. Second one is steak and crab legs. But it's pizza and wings. That's the most famous one.
It may surprise you to learn that frequently the captain has his own chef.
I'm a CS2. I'm a culinary specialist, second class petty officer, and my name is DiPerio. The last name is DiPerio, but my first name is Sol Rosita.
Ah, and where are you originally from?
I was born and raised in the Philippines, and I moved in San Diego 9 years ago.
And what ship are you based on?
I'm based in USS Wasp, LHD-1. We are based in Norfolk, Virginia.
And I hear you have a very special position on the ship.
I cook for the captain.
The captain gets...
The captain of the ship. Yes, ma'am. He gets his own cook. He gets what he wants.
And what do you feed the captain? Tell me a little bit about how his meals perhaps differ. What does he eat?
He is so simple. He is on his diet right now. So he loves to eat tuna fish.
And that's your job, to just feed him?
Just feed him, and the rest, if we have guests on board like admirals and captains, I feed maximum of 8 in his cabin, in his room. So I cook for 8 persons and just him alone on a regular days.
And where did you get your training?
Back home in the Philippines, I work in an American restaurant, ma'am. So we call it a casual dining restaurant. But it is basically a casual McDonald's because we serve the same food every day. So I got experience from that, and I'm so proud. I'm here in the United States.
In the War of 1812, a young U.S. nation defeated the British Empire, the greatest naval power in the world. Now Great Britain is a close ally of the U.S., so the HMS Montrose sailed across the Atlantic to join in our celebration.
My name's Luke Gaffney. I'm on HMS Montrose in the Royal Navy, and I'm an able chef.
But tell me, what does the Royal Navy eat?
Well, every Friday is fish and chips, every Saturday is steak night, and every Sunday is roast dinner.
Define that for me.
Well, it's your choice of either roast beef or roast lamb or roast chicken. You know, just a general joint of meat roasted, roast potatoes, vegetables, choice of accompaniments such as Yorkshire pudding or applesauce or, you know, stuff like that. And then generally just, you know, the kind of meal that makes you feel like, okay, yeah, you're away from home, but at least you've still got a home here.
It gives them that home feeling.
Yeah, that's how I see our job on board, is without provide morale, you know. People might have a really crap day, but then when they come down to the galley and they get something to eat, that's, yeah, okay, today's been crap, but, you know, it's steak night, so I'm happy.
And how long are you at sea at a time?
The longest we've been at sea on this deployment has been 23 days. But, I mean, we've been away from England now since October 2011, so it's been a long time away.
Oh, my goodness. And tell me, when you're aboard ship, what are the most important ingredients that you always need to have along?
Salt, pepper, potatoes, onions to bulk everything out because we don't have enough meat, love and alcohol.
How does that go in the British Navy? Do you all still get your alcohol rations?
Well, we're allowed 3 tins of alcohol a night, you know, whether it's that's beer or rum or the equivalent in glasses of wine. But then on ceremonial occasions, we still splice the moon brace, where we get the ceremonial tot of rum.
The fleet sailed on to continue the celebration in Boston, Baltimore, and New York City. But they'll be back in 2015 to continue the party, just in time for the bicentennial of the Battle of New Orleans. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
Come on, protect the motherland. Join your fellow man
in the Navy.
Come on, people, and make a stand
in the Navy.
In the Navy.
In the Navy.
Ah.
That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we're introduced to the life of farmstead chefs Lisa Kivarist and John Ivanko.
We can get much closer to our food source, literally, when we start growing our own. And every year, the garden gifts us with different things when we adapt our recipes accordingly. And that's very much the theme of Farmstead Chef, too, of using what you have and substituting when you don't and enjoying, importantly, real food.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe and the Bourbon House, Lights Eagan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cooking Magazine. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.